call this May 5th Media Legislature to order. I ask you to rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
That was nice.
I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have a roll call of members?
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Aquí.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Cha?
I'm here.
Mr. Klinkelaer?
Present.
14 members present.
And petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
We'll start our meeting with a wonderful proclamation. If you want to come in, to those who are associated with the Youth Community Service Week Award. We have both members of the Tompkins County Youth Services Board. And there's some students who are representing different groups. Many, many different awards are being given. I think maybe 80 or so, but tonight we have a small representation. You can come in. Be making a presentation to the chair of the Youth Services Board, but then they'll be making presentations to the young people. So maybe I'll read the proclamation. This is in honor of Youth Community Service Week. Whereas the Tompkins County Youth Services Board and Department have challenged and encouraged the young people of Tompkins County to become active as volunteers and leaders. And whereas there are thousands of young people throughout Tompkins County who volunteer on a weekly, monthly, and annual basis to improve the quality of life and vitalities of their communities. And whereas efforts during April were part of a larger global youth service initiative, during which time young people were encouraged to contribute to their community and world through service and activism, and whereas the Tompkins County Youth Services Board seeks to recognize, encourage, and support the many young heroes in our community who volunteer and make a positive difference in the lives of others, their communities, and in the quality of their environment, and whereas the Youth Services Department wishes to recognize the adult volunteers and professional staff who enable our young people to contribute their talents in meaningful ways. Now, therefore, I, Michael Klinkelaer, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby recognize May 3rd through 9th, 2009, as Youth Community Service Week in Tompkins County. I present this to Kathy Schlatter, Chair of the Youth Services Board. The Youth Services Board invited many youth groups from around the county to nominate young people for the Community Service Awards, and we have some of the awards tonight. Others who couldn't be here will get their awards in a different way. So maybe Kathy can start us off as chair of the board.
Thank you. We were really delighted to do this. There are so many young people who do so many great and interesting things for our community, and just to be able to recognize just a few of them tonight, it was very exciting to all members of the board. And we had a committee who worked very hard on this. And Asher Hockett, who is a member of our board, is here to represent the committee and to help pass out the awards. So the first group we would like to recognize, you're going to go behind this, is from TST BOCES. Two students have done a wonderful job of volunteering every day to help FoodNet package and label meals, their home-delivered meals. We'd like to recognize for their community service Tessa Stevenson from the Trumansburg School District. And Aziza Spate from Dryden School District. Thank you. Thank you both. We also want to recognize a special group of young women who acted as super mentors for this year's Sister to Sister program, helping to plan the one-day workshop and training other high school girls to serve as mentors for girls in middle school. We'd like to recognize those who could be here tonight. Norina Gaeta. Teresa McCorkle. Valerie Weber. And Virginia Winkler. These are my directions.
Go ahead.
Okay. The next group we're honoring is Vitamin L, the well-known chorus and community resources. 70 students participate in the chorus, which performs concert that instill positive ideals through a fun medium and build positive character development for the performers, as well as children in and youth in their schools and community audiences. In addition to thanking the full chorus, we'll recognize some of the special young people who volunteer additional hours behind the scenes in leadership roles with the organization. And Asher's going to give out, or Nancy, you're giving out these. Gil St. George. Kalila Booker Cassano. Hannah Rawlings. And Cameron Younger. We'd also like to recognize the Vitamin L webmaster, Stephen Wagner. The last group we want to publicly recognize this evening is a group of 250 Trumansburg students, they're not all here, who celebrated Earth Day by cleaning up and beautifying the village of Trumansburg. Young people who participate in the Youth Development Program, co-sponsored by the Town of Ulysses, the Village of Trumansburg, Cooperative Extension, and Tompkins County. These were joined by athletes of every team and volunteers from after-school programs. They worked in teams to collect trash from every village street, to plant trees at the school, and to beautify Main Street, the farmers market site, and the local library. The Cooperative Extension staff, who were the catalyst for this event, have asked Youth Commissioner members Hannah Parker Carver and Elizabeth Seaman to accept certificates on behalf of the 14 groups that participated. And last but not least, I would just like to mention that we want to note that this special week will conclude with a Youth Plan Teen Empowerment Forum on Saturday, May 9th. We want to recognize the many young people who helped make this countywide event possible, and we wish them good luck. The Youth Services Board will also be sending certificates to many other groups who were nominated, thanking them for their services. So I just want to conclude. We're very proud of the young people and the 4,000 other like them in our community who volunteer their time and their talents. We appreciate the work that dedicated adult volunteers and our youth work professionals do to cultivate and channel this positive energy. And finally, we'd like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the legislature for your support. Thank you very much.
Come this way.
We will all file our grievances.
Thanks to all the families and caregivers who support these young people in doing their leadership activities. That was certainly a highlight. I hope we can keep that same upbeat note throughout the meeting. I'll read a more mundane proclamation now. This is in honor of County Government Week in Tompkins County. Whereas New York State's 57 counties and 5 boroughs in New York City serve as the administrative arm of the state of New York, whereas Tompkins County and all counties take seriously their responsibility to protect and enhance the health, welfare, and safety of its residents in sensible and cost-effective ways, and whereas many county government initiatives and programs involve the protection of valuable and vulnerable environmental resources in communities, and whereas the National Association of Counties, NACO, created National Government Week in 1991 to raise public awareness and understanding about the roles and responsibilities of the nation's counties to meet the needs of the community. And whereas counties in New York State have adapted since being created in 1683 during the era of Dutch colonialization, when counties were created as a regional form of government to coordinate the collection of taxes, construct and maintain a transportation infrastructure, administer justice, and provide jails for the public safety. And whereas Tompkins County continues to adapt county operations, improve efficiencies, and modernize essential public services to meet the needs of our 21st century communities, and whereas the New York State Association of Counties, NYSAC, is marking this year's County Government Week with the theme of Modernizing County Government, and whereas NYSAC and Tompkins County are working together to restore the partnership between all levels of government to better serve New Yorkers, now therefore I, Michael Kaplinka-Lehrer, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 3rd through 9th, 2009, as County Government Week in Tompkins County. I guess I'll pass this to Paula, because you're the closest. Thank you. Thank you, Joe, and all of us. I'll simply announce that at 7 o'clock sharp, wherever we are in our meeting, we're going to adjourn for a health benefits consortium presentation under special orders of the day. We're going to ask us to do our best to expedite our business so that we can be pretty much done with the meeting by then, so we can put our attention on that. But I know how deliberative you are on all your agenda items, so maybe we won't quite be done by then. Privilege of the floor for the public. We have two people who sent in their slips in advance, and anyone else is welcome to speak as well. We'll start with Vonnie Dawson from Groton.
Hi, I'm Vonnie Dawson from Groton, New York. My phone number is 591-2716. I'm waiting for you guys to call me. I gave you a file last meeting, and I've got stuff for you to look at and put in the file. Hopefully, you're looking at the stuff. My granddaughter's still in foster care. What I gave you tonight is the call narrative that went into New York State, and it was me calling in after I called Tompkins County to ask for daycare assistance to help me so that I could get through the custody battle that I was having with my granddaughter, Alana, who was living with me for almost a year, just a couple weeks short of a year. I needed some daycare assistance so that I could finish going to court with that, and I needed help in finding daycare, so I called in, and that resulted in them telling me that I had to call the 800 number and report what happened to the last time that my daughter actually babysat for me. And that was the initial call to CPS. Then you see another call narrative on the next page. That, I believe, was made from somebody here at the courthouse after I come into the courthouse with my 3 grandchildren, and Tim Little and I had a verbal disagreement because I had just left CPS and was told not to give my grandson to anyone. I was to keep him until Friday when we come back to court. Mary Ann Banks told me to do that. I come in, Tim Little put his hands on me and was physically pushing me why I had my grandson in my arms. I come up to the legislature's office. He followed me up to the legislature's office, told me I had no right to be there. Again, put his hands on me. I left. I went out to the car with my two granddaughters. You'll see the police report that day. That'll show you that I was not in the courthouse when the police arrived. My name and the two girls' names aren't even on that police report. You read Tim Little's statement. He lies in his statement. He said that I had to be removed by the police and that the girls saw the girls were in the courthouse, whatever. You read the stuff. Make your own decisions. I'm telling you. This whole thing is crazy. Somebody ought to be looking at the employees at the social services. $800 was spent on a psychologist just to testify in court for me. And Tompkins County taxpayers paid for that. That's not including his evaluations of me or anything else. That's just court costs for him. 10 attorneys sat in these courtrooms for days and days and days. 10 attorneys paid by the Tompkins County taxpayers. Only one attorney was not paid by taxpayers, and that was Bill Kurtz, my daughter's attorney. You people paid for an attorney for me for days and days. And now, Rhiannon's still in foster care after a year, and you're paying for that. And they're telling me that I need a psychological exam. You guys are going to pay for that. Then you're going to, you've already paid for all kinds of classes for Michelle. Michelle's got her one son. If she can have one child, why can't she have both her kids? I don't get it. It's personality conflicts at social services. Somebody needs to get these people under control. I've tried to talk to Anita and set up a meeting with Anita. It hasn't worked. Nobody wants to meet with me. Nobody from the board has wanted to talk to me. I can show you lies in black and white. Just call me. Please call me.
Thank you, Vani. And our next speaker, Mike Lane, has signed up from Dryden.
I'm Mike Lane. Nice to see everybody. I hate to remind you about the difficult time that occurred at the beginning of the year, starting with the organizational meeting and proceeding after that with the difficulties you folks had in coming to an organization. Having sat in the audience for those meetings and watched it and reflected, it was painful, no question about it. No, not as painful as for each of you, I'm sure. But I tried to think about it and what kind of a lesson could be learned from it. The role of chair is not an easy one. Having served as vice chair and chaired the meeting on several occasions when I was on the board, there's a lot going on that the chair has to be cognizant of, and also the chair has to be able to vote for his or her constituents at the same time. They have to follow the what's going on. They have to be able to vote. They have to be able to make sure that others are treated fairly and move the discussion along. One of the problems we have is the way that it is voted. Resolutions and motions are voted on here, and that's mostly by show of hand. That's where a lot of the problems arise. At town board level, all resolutions are done by a roll call of members. We haven't in the past at the county legislature, you haven't voted by roll call except when it's been asked for or when there's, say, a bonding resolution or something that requires it. The problem with the show of hands is everyone gets tired. They question things. They get upset with others. You may have the hand way up here. I'm an aye or I'm a no. You may have the hand down here. Yeah, I guess so. Or, you know, is it my turn to vote? And the chair is having to count those votes and maybe have to count again if asked you to put your hands up again. That can be frustrating, and that's where mistakes can be made. I'd like the legislature to think about instituting an electronic voting system. They are out there. They can be purchased, and they wouldn't break the bank for the legislature. They're systems that would allow each person to cast his or her ballot when necessary by the throwing of a switch. It would probably have a board up on the back and a board in the in front of the chair that would show the votes. It could give time for people to change votes before they are announced, and that's in keeping with Robert's Rules of Order. It would also have a system where you could ask to speak and you'd be queued in, and people, the first ones to ask to speak, would be taken in order. That would also assist the chair to make sure that everyone's treated fairly and that someone isn't missed with his or her hand in the back not being noticed by the chair. I think it would help. That doesn't mean you could exclude having still have voice votes if on the roll call if you wanted to do that. But it would be a way to try to eliminate some of this confusion that happens with the voting and the revoting that we've seen, and unfortunately very sad examples of it earlier this year. I'd like you to think about that, and that's a suggestion from the audience. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Is there anyone else here from the public who wishes to speak on the privilege of the floor? Okay, I'll move to privilege of the floor for legislators, and again remind us that we're trying to get our business done in an expeditious way. Jim Dennis.
I promise you it's not controversial. I had the good fortune to attend the Farmers Market for Earth Day, and our own county administrator was asked to speak there and be the opening speaker for the ceremony that was held down there. I gave him a couple pictures to record the event, and he represented us well, and I thought it was a especially fun event, and I wanted to bring that to your attention. It's the first time I've seen the county administrator at this sort of an event, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Thank you for noting that, Jim, and thank you, Joe, for representing us. Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. As everybody knows, it's spring, and soon we will be having the Ithaca Festival. And the festival buttons, which are one of the main sources of support, are now in sale. And I would encourage everybody to go out and buy one, buy five, give them to your friend, you know, relatives out of town. The festival really needs our support, and they're available at stores all over town. And the last week before the festival, that you actually, if you have one of the buttons, you qualify for discounts. It's a very, very good thing to do, and there are also many, many ways to help out with the festival. So if you're interested, go to their website. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Martha Robertson.
I would like to draw your attention to an article in today's paper that where the Chamber of Commerce is telling us what to do. That we should find efficiencies. Can't argue with that. The report is about a meeting yesterday, that I was at. I've been going to the Governmental Affairs Committee meetings almost for 7 years. So the meeting was mostly about other topics. I had about 5 minutes at the end of the meeting to talk briefly about the county budget, got one or two questions. And John Newman is quoted in the article, and I just wanted to let the public know, let John know that, well, John knows, because I've answered by email that Joe and Jim and I would be happy to meet with him to talk about efficiencies. Anybody else wants to join us to hear what his ideas are for saving money? So certainly that's something that we're going to be looking for. I'm not sure. He's got $4 million worth of suggestions, but if he does, we'll really look at him.
Thanks, Martha. Mike Hattery?
I just want to ask, who wrote this article?
Who wrote the article? Tim Ashma.
Oh, so it was summarizing this discussion with the chamber.
Right.
Okay.
Tyke Randall?
Yeah, a few things. Just a reminder to the town and village of Groton residents that the tax assessment grievance day is Thursday, May 14th, 3 to 6 at the Groton Town Hall. Also, there's the 25th annual TST BOCES plant sale, one Saturday only, which is this Saturday, 8 to noon. Regular weekday hours, Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 2:45. This is a greenhouse run by the students. This year, I was just talking to one of the audience members from BOCES. They've anticipated an influx of people needing vegetable plants and things this year. because of the economy. She assured me they had tons of those. So, really good deal. I bought, they have hanging baskets, that kind of thing there. Also, McLean's annual happening in Hamlet is Friday, May 8th, and Saturday, May 9th. Come out and see your tourism dollars at work. Bonfire, Iron Chef, cook-off, Billy Goat Bingo, kind of a good old-time, old village Hamlet fun day. Come out and have some fun. Thanks.
Thank you, Tyke. Leslie, me being Claiborne.
Thank you. And keeping with the recognizing in youth, and that was wonderful, youth leadership, I want to let my colleagues know and everybody else out there who's looking know that on Thursday, the City of Ithaca Youth Council will have its first meeting at 7 o'clock in Common Council Chambers. And if you don't know anything about the Youth Council, actually one of the young men here, Cameron Younger, who was recognized tonight for his leadership in the community, is a member of Youth Council. This is a 10-member teenage council with voting representatives that come from across municipalities. So it's not just City of Ithaca being represented. It is many of our municipalities, and also including representation from the city school district. This is their first public meeting since they have organized, and they're inviting the public to come and share thoughts, concerns, hopes, anything that will help in improving lives of our area youth. The Youth Council is back in a new form it used to be before now, and it's back. Again, because a few years ago, our youth were facing so many issues. Collectively, they thought of just the treatment of youth across within schools, across the business community, that they had many concerns. They came to the City of Ithaca Common Council and voiced their concerns, and one of the promises that came out of that is for them to really organize, and this is coming to fruition. So I'm excited about it and invite all of you and everybody watching that if you have ideas, thoughts, anything that you'd like to share with this council, who will then make recommendations to the mayor and the city council, as well as other municipalities, to put in place policies, programs, ordinances, whatever it may be, to really help improve the life for youth here in our community. They welcome it, or if not, to just come out and support them and give them a rah-rah for getting started and continuing in this leadership vein. I'm very proud of those youth.
Thank you, Leslie. Any other legislators wish to speak? If not, I would ask your indulgence to rearrange the agenda slightly, since some of the reports from our administration, they'll be here for the meeting. We don't have a consent agenda. Why don't we actually move to our budget committee and ask them to move their three resolutions, if people are okay with that. We have one appointment on the consent, but I'll do that at the end, if that's okay.
Frank? Just information. Are we anticipating an executive session tonight?
There will be a brief executive session regarding one small legal matter. It's really updating us about a legal matter. So I'll ask Jim to move, give a brief.
Thank you, Michael. Resolution A, endorsing state legislation, Senate 3984 and Assembly 1753, extending existing sales and use tax authority on the County of Tompkins, and I would move.
Is there a second? Martha Robertson seconds. Is there discussion? Catherine Lucerer.
I just want to let the public know why I voted against this. A lot of people in government have said it's insane. You can't vote against this. We need this money. Our budget depends on it. That's why. Because I think we come to depend on taxes like these. And despite varying analysis, sales tax, especially at a time when people are out of work, is a regressive tax. And when we depend on a tax like this and our budget is built on it, we just make it to where it's going to become necessary for us to continue extending and adding to it. It's true that I have the luxury of voting against this, because if there were a possibility that this didn't pass, we would be in terrible shape because of the massive amount of money it represents. And people are over there nodding their heads. I'm not trying to fool people by pretending I'm against a tax that I'm for, or that I'm for a tax that I'm against. What I'm saying is, this is a bad tax. I'm willing to vote against it, but we need it here in Tompkins County for our budget. That's what's a problem, that our budget really requires these sales taxes that are regressive. We can get into a discussion about the property tax later, but I think it's a shame that so many of us have to vote for this in order to keep our county running. That's why I voted no at committee, and that's why I'm going to vote no now.
Thank you, Kathy.
In a couple of minutes.
Thank you, Kathy. I will, then Frank, then Jim.
Thank you, Mike. I, too, am going to be voting against this because I feel that sales tax are one of the worst forms of tax that we collect. They are inherently regressive, and they are, unfortunately, inherently a vital part of our budget. I please recognize that what we're doing tonight is actually not actually enacting this, this tax, but merely calling upon the state to extend our ability to increase the tax by 1 cent. But that's why I will be voting against.
To continue the increase that is in effect.
Correct.
Frank Proto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess there'll be at least three of us voting against this. This consistently warrants a no vote from me, and it has ever since inception. It was installed a number of years ago to restore the temporary shortfall that was created when, believe it or not, we were doing landfills, and it was supposed to help restore the fund balance back then, and it has come to be the 1% that we have depended on along with the rest of our sales tax, and I certainly think it's outlived the original purpose, and I agree with Kathy that the opportunity to vote against it only comes every so often, and this is the opportunity.
Thank you, Frank. Jim Dennis?
I know it's not that important, but in the first whereas it says, has the authority to enact an additional 1 cent? And I think we're talking about 1%?
1%.
1%, yes.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't Thank you for say catching that. Right. And Martha Roberts.
It's not like I like taxes, but the point here is I think we need a balance of taxes. And people who study tax policy will tell you that the healthiest form of paying for public services is a balance that includes income tax, property tax, and sales tax. And it's really, in New York, I think, well, I think nationwide, mostly the my biggest problem with tax policy is that property tax is the fundamental source for school, for education funding, and I think that that builds in inequities, and that's my biggest problem with the structure of taxes. I think another problem in New York is that Medicaid, for example, is significantly on the property tax where it isn't in other most other states. I think this is one other point about the sales tax in this county is it is one way that students who live in tax-exempt housing can help support the services that they use while they're living in Tompkins County. So I would support a balanced approach to taxes. I know we don't have that in New York State, but I'm going to support this.
Are we ready to vote? All in Leslie McLean Claiborne.
I thought you'd seen me before.
I
do want to win, Mr. Chair, because this is one of those places where I feel rather torn, and I want to make sure that I make mention that I know that we've come to rely on this, and it's something that's already existing. However, for a number of years, my former colleague, Mike Lane, who addressed this earlier, myself and others, have been attempting to get us to consider a tax holiday on clothing and shoes, $110 and below. And that's one of the things that I hope at some point we'll consider. I know this year is really hard, so I'm hard-pressed to vote on this right now. I will support it because I know we need it, but I hope that that's something that we will all keep in mind as we try to relieve the burden on the residents who are out there who are suffering just as hard from everything that's going on.
Thank you. If we're ready to vote, I'll call for a roll call vote.
Thank you.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Hattery?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. McAsee?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Mr. Randall?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stevenson?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Kaplinka-Lair?
Yes.
Eleven ayes, four no.
That passes. And
Jim,
you have the prerogative to rearrange the order.
Yeah,
also.
I thought that over, Mike, and I think we'll stay in the order we're in.
Okay.
Establishment of the 2010 county financial goal, and it's the revised resolution that you all have, Resolution B, and I would move that.
It's the revised, and I've handed out right before the meeting from the committee, and Nathan Shinagawa seconds it.
Wait, I don't have a revised one.
It should be inside your red folder.
Yeah, it's in the red folder.
There's only a slight difference at the end of the resolved about how much it would affect a $100,000 home.
Nope, I have a C, but not a B.
I'm sorry, I don't have it either.
Okay, we'll take a moment, make some more copies.
Kathy walked around and put them on our desk. Oh, that was C.
I'm sure I'll find it later.
While we're tending to copies, let me make a comment. We had a retreat that most of you attended, and we had a long and somewhat arduous discussion. We ended up with a sense out of that retreat that we would recommend a 3% levy. And the committee voted on that today, and it was voted 3-2. To bring it to the legislature, and I'm not going to characterize what the negative votes were, but what I asked for was that we would get this to the legislature floor and it would not lose traction in the committee. And I appreciate the fact that people supported it, and I know they may well not support it out here, but I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. I had Dewey Kiefer and then Frank Proto. And I'll just, I think, make a note that the 4.4, the dollar sign 4.4, is 4.4 million.
Right.
So, Dewey.
Thank you. I was going to ask you what the vote was in committee, so thank you for mentioning that. And I offered your committee, but was not there to speak for it, some amendments. I appreciate your adding the second whereas, which explains that that we as a legislature, no, I'm sorry. Let me start again. What I wanted to have added to the resolution was an explanation that the 14.8% tax levy increase, which is mentioned in the second whereas, includes about 5.5% tax levy increase just to cover New York State mandates and automatic payments without providing any money toward our locally controlled programs. And when I see that what came out of committee is an increase, a maximum of only 3%, I find that pretty much unconscionable. It means that we aren't even covering what we have no choice about. And I also wanted to point out that, by way of illustration, a 6% tax levy increase would increase taxes paid on a $100,000 home by all of just under $16 a year. And if we chose to have a 14.8% tax levy increase, which would be the full maintenance of effort for what we're doing this year, that would equate to about $67.50 on a $100,000 home. It's not that people have $100,000 homes, but it's easy to multiply the $100,000, use that to figure out what your own increase would be. So we're not talking about a lot of dollars for low income homes, but it is an increase. And I cannot bring myself to vote for this because I think we are setting ourselves up to harm the very people that we keep saying we want to help. We, as was mentioned earlier in one of the lines you read in a proclamation, we act as the state agents in a county, and we are the safety net providers. And I don't take that lightly. Thank you.
Thank you, Dooley. Frank Proto.
Thank you, Mike. Jim, when we had the retreat, there was a chart up on the screen that showed what the, if we did a 3%.
Oh, right.
What,
if you look in your red folders, there's now a salmon covered chart that includes every percentage from 0 to 10,
right,
and then 14.8. So you have a full range of options. I don't think we have to go through every one with our votes, but...
Where I was going, Mike, is in order for us to do a 0% levy,
yes,
we would have to come up with, if I read this correctly, a $5.5 million decrease in for program changes.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to show how severe, I mean, while a lot of us would love to see 0%, the severity of that is pretty dear. And it would invoke a tax change on a $100,000 home, pardon me, of almost $18.
That would be, 0% would be a decrease of $18.
Yes, a decrease of $18.
Are there any other comments before we move to a vote? Martha Robertson?
I agree very much with Dooley's mandates. First, Dooley's thoughts that when we look at the mandates of the retirement accounts, the pension payments we're going to have to put add in, we have no control of that. The early intervention and pre-K caseloads that are going up 10% a year, we have no control of that. Caseload increases in DSS, we have no control over those caseloads that are projected to go up this year. And what's the fourth? Indigent defense. We will have to be paying increased payments for that. It's true the 3% levy wouldn't even cover the 4% target. That wouldn't even cover those mandates. Even a 5% levy target would mean cutting $3.6 million in local spending. Our county administrator came in to our legislative retreat with a recommendation of 5%. This is from 15% levy increase for maintenance of effort. He cut that by two-thirds and said, I think 5% is where you ought to be, leaning towards 6%. But he said, I would recommend 5. So 3 is arbitrary, and there's, nobody has identified any way that there's any reasonable expectation we will reach that. In fact, I've had a number of legislators who are arguing in favor of 3 or lower. They've all said, I think we won't make 3. It'll be okay if we go over that. However, there's a real damage to setting a target that's lower than realistic, even remotely realistic. It causes stress among the staff. It causes people to even consider leaving county government. We've seen that before. It certainly causes stress among the public. I think the responsible thing is to set the target at a level where we think we might be able to make it. So I would like to amend this resolution to read that we would set the tax levy increase at 4%, and all the subsequent numbers would be adjusted. 4% would still be very tough, but I think there's some legitimate reason to think we might be able to make that. I would like to take a second.
Before you speak, is there a second for the amendment? Pam McAsey, okay.
I would like to just integrate this for a moment into the next resolution about the salaries for this year, because these are not unrelated. I will support the good faith agreement of 2.25% for the union that we're talking about and for the confidential employees. But on the management salaries, we have a choice. This is our call whether to agree with the increase also for the management salaries. It feels to me, and Joe mentioned at the budget meeting that, or after the budget meeting, that the dollar amount is, I think, $132,000. Management raises at 2.25% would be $132,000 this year. Understand that even if salaries don't go up next year, we have to pay that same base. So we're talking about $264,000 real dollars for management salaries this year and next, if passed, if that next resolution is passed as written. So I would like to be able to include that management raise in the resolution. However, if we vote a 3% levy target, we have to start immediately looking for savings, and it seems completely illogical to me to pass a 3% target and then to approve raises for management at $264,000. So that's why I'm putting those together. That's why I'm putting out the option of a 4% levy, and I hope we get 8 votes on it.
Further discussion on the amendment. I had Will and Jim on the main motion. Do you want to proceed on? I'll wait on you and talk about the amendment now. I have Carol and then Kathy and Leslie.
Yeah, I believe it's irresponsible for us to not find a way to at least cover items that we are mandated to cover. We hear from people in our public that this is a year that we have to consider belt tightening, that everybody in the world is belt tightening, and that we have to do our jobs there. And it's very clear that anything we do that's under 14.8% is going to require us to do serious belt tightening. I think it's fair for us to be looking at belt tightening for all of those items that we have some control over. But I also think that the state of New York needs to recognize, and we need to have the backing to go back to the state of New York and say, you can't keep sending mandates down to us and not funding them and expecting us to keep absorbing the difference. And for us to quietly absorb that difference without commenting on it and without building in a way to handle it for this year, I think is irresponsible to our residents. So I will support this. It's really not enough.
Thank you, Carol. This is on the amendment of 4%. Kathy Lou Herrera, then Leslin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Everybody's gotten very serious because these are serious discussions. And when we talk about the mandates, I think that whether you agree or not that it's legitimate for the state to push them down to us, whether you're working or not to change that practice, which many of us are, we're going to have to pay them. However, to me, this doesn't mean that it's irresponsible to pass a tax rate that is lower than the mandates that we have to pay. Just as when somebody gets laid off in a household, the household budget has to shrink and you have to give up some things that you thought before you couldn't live without, we're going to have to find some things that we're going to have to do without. I want to make clear that something that I've spoken about with department heads and members of the community, that I understand and am coming to understand more every day some of the demands that a downturn in the economy like this places on Health and Human Services and on many of the aid programs that we support here in Tompkins County, and I don't think that any of us around the table here want to cut those vital programs at a crisis time like this. I still think that we can find places in county government, despite all the hard work that our department heads and our organization administrators and nonprofits have been doing over the years to keep us among the strongest counties in Tompkins County, fiscally strong and also strong in terms of the talent that we can keep, the talent that we can attract. I think we can find a way, and I'm going to tell you, I've been a member of the Zero Club for a long time. What I've found out through the years is asking for a zero-based budget in government is it's anathema. It's impossible to get the will of the legislature, the majority of us, behind that. And I am, besides a number of other things, a pragmatist, and that's why this year I supported 3% in the budget retreat, and recently in the budget committee to get it out of committee at 3%. I will not go a penny higher, and I would like to go much lower, because I'm not thinking about perpetuating county government. I'm thinking about people that have lost their jobs, people that are, their health care costs have blossomed out of control, and even if it only represents $15 on a $100,000 house, what if you're fixing to be kicked out of your house anyway and you can't pay the sales taxes? The problems on the ground that people are facing, I think perhaps some of us are out of touch with, and 3%, although it's higher than I would like to go, is a compromise I'm willing to make to get a reasonable goal that, although it may be difficult and we may risk failure, any goal worth going after is one that you have to stretch to reach, and I think that we should go ahead and try for a 3% goal. If somebody wants to put 2 out there, watch me. I'll vote yes for that, and I think we should try for that too. But 3 is what I think we can get the votes for, and that's why I'm supporting it.
Thank you. Again, on the amendment for 4%, Will Burbank, then Jim. I'd like to move toward the vote on the amendment.
I want to speak on the amendment.
Sorry. I'm on the wrong list. Yep, you're right. Leslin, then Mike Sigler. This is the amendment discussion.
Thank you. Kathy, I hope we don't go to 2%. Yeah. Sorry you even suggested it.
That's all right.
I was actually one of those people that Martha's talking about here who know that we have some very hard work to do and hope we come a 3. Because of illness, I was not at the budget retreat, and then I heard of the 3% that my colleagues, and I'm not sure what information changed from then to now that's making it necessary for us to change the votes that came out of budget for 3%, but that's neither here nor there. What is eating at the core of my gut right now is hearing that it's okay to sacrifice to people who are arms and legs that put our policies in place and work hard daily for everybody else. And that doesn't sit well with me. It doesn't sit well with me to hear that, well, we're just not going to give managers anything, but we want to maintain the quality of life for everybody else. These are the people in our organization who work their butts off to make sure that the things we put in place happen. And I think that it's unfortunate that those kinds of comments can come to this floor and we have to pit one against the other. That's my comment.
Mike Sigler?
I could have talked on either one of these, but I just wanted to say, there's a lot of talk out there about shared sacrifice. And to me, we've never shot for 0% as long as I've been on here. And I just, I look at this year and I go, if you're not going to do it this year, you're just never going to do it. I guess it can get worse than today. We may have a slight recovery and then go down again. It's unclear what's going to happen. People mentioned about maintaining mandates. I couldn't agree with you more. But the problem is, the mandates, I don't foresee them ever going down. The state is not willing to take over some of these mandates. And if we don't plan for that within our own budgets, then we're never going to be having control of taxes. I know a lot of people who overspend. and I know them, and they say to themselves, God, if I could only make more money, if I could only get another job and make an extra $10,000. Then I could pay these bills. And then they do it. And then they go and get another job, make more money. And then they say, God, if I only made more money, I could do this. And I look at government the same way. Every time that we say, you know, we need more money, we're going to tax people more to pay these outstanding bills. You know, oh, if we only could do more. Well, at some point, I think you have to dial back and say, you know, maybe we can't do these things. Maybe there are certain things out there that we're not able to fund. I wish the state would have taken that look at that this year. They had a $17 billion hole. I think they're still going to have billions of dollars in debt when all is said and done, much like California just found out that it has an enormous billion-dollar hole in its budget. And then we'll see what the state does. But again, if this isn't the wake-up call, I'm really not sure what would be. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Before I go call on anyone for a second time, does anyone else on the amendment wish to speak for a first time? Dooley?
Martha, listening to your introductory remarks, I was figuring you were going to make an amendment higher than 4%. 4% doesn't do it for me, so I'll be voting against it.
And I think the only other person who had their hand up for a second time is Martha Roberts, and then I'd like to move to a vote. You are on the amendment.
Thank you. I don't consider it pitting people against each other, Leslie. I think this is exactly the kind of choice we're going to be facing. And, even at 4%, we're going to be taking very, very serious cuts. We're going to be laying people off. We're going to be shutting down programs that we've believed in and people have appreciated and lobbied us to keep for years. So we're going to be making very, very serious cuts even at 4%. And you know, the state could come back and give us more hits even. So this is nothing personal about management whatsoever. But it just makes zero sense to me to pass a target at 3%, and then the next thing you do is raise spending $264,000 when you don't have to.
Thank you. I have Jim quickly, then Leslin, and then Carol, I'd like to vote.
Jim. I'm not going to support the 4, but I just want to make a couple of points. One, that residents of Tompkins County can be assured that this government will make sure all the mandates are implemented. If it costs other kinds of things, we will do what the state instructs us to do in the basic service area. I want to make a comment about the 8 votes that came out of it was not an official meeting, although it was an open meeting. It was a consensus feeling that I had and others that we basically had that. I also am a realist. I know people change their minds, so I'm not, I wasn't counting that I had 8 votes here. I knew we would have this discussion. The whole thing, whether it's 4 or 3 or 5, it's a challenge to the county administrator. It's a challenge to the department heads to see if they can come to this goal that we're setting. It could be very difficult and very painful. Someone said stress. Of course there's going to be stress. But that's what we're supposed to do. We hand it over and we say, go to it, Mr. County Administrator and department heads, and see what you can come up with. If they don't come up with what we want, they will be back to us. And I think that's the way the game is played right now. So 3, 4, anything short of the 14.8 is going to cause stress to everyone. And the 14.8 would cause stress to the people behind me, the 11 people watching. So.
Thank you, Jim. We're on the amendment for 4%. Leslie, then Carol.
Actually, Jim pretty much said what I wanted to say.
Okay, and Carol?
Yeah, I just was going to ask about the process for coming to a number. I found it quite confusing at the budget retreat, and I think one of the reasons we came out of the budget retreat was some confusion about who would support what number, and that it was never entirely clear that we had a majority to support that 3%, other than, I'll leave that there, was because we jumped around from number to number rather than sort of starting at one end and working either down or up. So I was just going to ask here that if other people have amendments they're going to further offer that are going to go above that 4%, wouldn't it be helpful to make them to amend the amendment now so that we can get some sense? Because it just seems to me we ran into problems process-wise
at the point
by not doing
budget
it
retreat
way.
That we had 12 members present. We did a variety of scenarios. Only one got a majority of those present, a majority of the legislature, which is where we stopped. I mean, people have their own memory of how many different scenarios we tried, and we could go through every single one tonight, which I do not relish, but we can if it's important for the public business.
Yeah.
I have Jim.
So what I'm asking is that if that's going to happen, I'm asking if people who have higher amounts to suggest
They will share that. Jim, and then...
It matters none what happened at that meeting. We have a resolution. We have a number. That's the number we're dealing with. I think the number was legitimate coming out of that, no matter how we got it. So we have one number from Martha. We have a number that I moved, and that's what the determination is. Please, let's not talk about what happened or didn't happen at the budget retreat.
Will Burbank.
Thank you, Michael. Thank Martha for introducing this. I think I agree with her impulse. She asked if I can point out something she forgot to do, which is that at 4%, the effective increase on a $100,000 home would be $5.17. Once again, in terms of the increase, we're not talking huge amounts, but if you're already feeling way overburdened by property taxes, every little bit hurts. We recognize this. Unfortunately, I do not feel I can, in good conscience, support even 4% because I don't think it addresses some of the core issues that I would like to speak to when we get back to the main agenda.
So it's too low, you mean?
So I'd like to move to a vote. Just to clarify, though, the 517 that Will just pointed out is if your house is 100,000 and it stayed assessed at 100,000 and everyone's houses in Tompkins County had an average assessment increase. Kathy Lucero.
May I ask for a roll call vote, please?
On the amendment. Certainly. We'll go through the roll call. All in favor of the 4% change in the revised resolution, the amendment.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Mr. Hattery?
No.
Ms. Ferreira?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Mr. Randall?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stevenson?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Ms. Chuck?
Yes.
Mr. Klinkelaer?
No.
4 ayes, 11 noes.
Back to the main motion from Budget Committee, which is 3%. I had Will and Jim next, and then after that, Nathan. Unless you've already spoken to you.
No, thank you, Mike. I do want to say I am the newest member of this body, and I appreciate all the hard work that has gone into formulating the information that we are reused at the budget retreat. Joe, you and Norma did a wonderful job. And one of the things that you made very clear to us is the reason we're in this horrible, horrible situation is largely because forces much beyond our control. The meltdown of the financial market that affected the state budget, the decrease in sales tax revenue, which has always been a significant portion of our income. And you laid out very good alternatives. I cannot in good conscience, however, support a 3% target at this point. And quite frankly, perhaps because I'm new to it, I don't even feel that it's a sensible way of approaching it by starting with a hard, fixed target at this point in the game without having any idea what kind of things we will consider cutting. I realize that the process has been you start with a number, you give it to our administrator, he works with department heads, and they come back and make some proposals, and then the public will have a chance to weigh in when they see treasurer programs cut. The numbers that we are contemplating at a 3%, the $4.4 million in cuts are incredible levels of pain. And I don't know how this is going to play out, but folks, if you're listening at home, if you are reading about this, please, please pay attention, because things that you value are really up on the line. So I'm going to be voting against the 3%, and I wish Joe the very best of luck in probably an incredible year in terms of making sense of all this.
Thank you, Jim. Did you want to?
Very short. I would hope, first of all, the county administrator and the staff have done a great job presenting all the information, the format, the way it was presented, all the information, the blueprint that the county administrator gave us to look forward into 2010 has also been very helpful. I would urge you to support the three and let them get busy and try to reach the three if they can. And that's what I would ask you to do, and hope they can do that.
I have Nathan, then I'll speak, then I have Kathy, Martha, and Dooley.
All right. I'm sorry if my comments are a bit of a downer, but really, I mean, there's no win-win situation in any scenario for this budget. And 3% especially isn't a win-win. And we really can't sugarcoat it. With 3%, you're going to have constituent services that will suffer, may suffer. You're going to have efficiencies are going to be inevitable, obviously. Layoffs are likely. All right, so it's going to be tough. But I think at the same time that we've got to control costs, we've got to manage our deficit, and we need to prioritize. And I think that 3% does that with a $4.4 million, I was going to say hammer, but I guess it's more like a razor since it's going to be cuts. And so therefore, I will support this. It's going to be painful, and it's going to be difficult. So my only other comment is that we should all brace ourselves.
Thank you. I just want to take a minute to explain why we even set a target at this time of year. Some people may not have followed the last few years, but the general thinking is give the best information we can during April to the budget committee and then eventually in our budget retreat. All the impacts of the state budget, every little nuance we can tease out in terms of assumptions. I counted after the budget retreat, there's 28 different assumptions in our numbers here and many, many factors that can change, of course. It then is handed off to the entire organization to have their best thinking in a very methodical, as relaxed as possible mode before the fall requests that then turn into our deliberations in the fall about those impacts. And it is in place of what our previous practice had been of having the county administrator come in and having a much shorter time from September 1st until the end of October, roughly, to digest all those impacts, whether we talked about it in committee or not, and then try to vote on what's the best thing for the public good. So setting a goal, is, I think, is supported generally. Whether we set a 3% goal or a 4% goal, I think that is our job this evening. It certainly was our job at the budget retreat to get a pulse of the community. What is the burden? What is the level the community can sustain? The county administrator recommended one number, but the rest of us heard different comments from the community, and then we came in after a fairly lengthy discussion at 3%. So I'm going to be supporting 3%, saying that is a threshold that will gather lots of information between now and the end of October in terms of the impact. We'll have time to educate the constituents about those impacts. We may have to adjust if indeed they come back and say we can't afford to lose those services. But I believe the situation that our community demands is a 3% guideline for our organization to hit. Kathy Lou Serrera, then Martha, then Dooley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I enjoyed hearing from Jim and Nathan because their thinking about this is very similar to mine. Yeah, it's a downer. This will be my eighth time going through this, and I just want to speak a minute about my own experiences. My memory of this may not be exactly close to anyone else's, but when I first sat down around this table and we were doing budget, it seemed to me that what we were doing was looking at the budget and figuring out where there were 8 votes for everything that we liked, everything that we wanted to continue, everything we'd like to start, everything we thought might be good, everything that we admired from somewhere else, everything that was a good thing to do if we could find the time and the money to do it. And then that was what we had as a proposed budget. Then the problem was we had to have 8 votes to get anything out that needed to be gotten out. And I don't remember the exact number, but my first year on the legislature, it was above 10%. I'm not bragging, the rate increase that I approved, and I'm saying rate increase because I think that's what it was at the time. Doing it this way seems overly stringent and overly hard, but it's the right direction to do it because the other way is backwards. It's hard to add stuff in, but it's much more fiscally responsible to have it this way. And I know that a lot of folks that work for the county happen to also live in the county and pay taxes in the county. And they recognize, as well as anyone else, and probably more than some folks who don't work for the county, how hard it is to reach these goals that we set that to some may seem arbitrary. And they work to help see that we get there, and they help present scenarios that we can get there. I'm there. I'm at 3%. That's it.
Thank you, Kathy. Martha, duly then Pam.
Well, I'm sort of despairing of changing anybody's mind. But let me try to at least help educate the public for a minute. This is the packet of information we got at the budget retreat. $4.4 million. That's what we're going to talk about cutting, right? Well, let's see. The whole highway division is $5 million. The sheriff's office is $2.9 million. The jail is $2.5 million. The library, we could just close the library. That only, closing the library only saves us $2.6 million. Human rights, $215,000. Tompkins Community Court, TC3, that's only $2.5 million. Human Services Coalition, all the agencies that we fund, $476,000. All youth services, $1 million. Do you realize what $4.5 million is going to do? I mean, you know, there is no nibbling at anything. I'm going to vote against this because I think it's not that. I mean, I agree with the way we're doing this. I agree with the target, setting a target. I think that's a good idea. It's a good innovation that we changed since I was first on the legislature. But I certainly can't support a 3% target.
Thank you. Dooley?
Well, I didn't have the benefit of going to the budget retreat because it was scheduled on a night when I couldn't attend. So I didn't appreciate that, but I did get the packet of information, and I, too, think that the information from Joe and Norma and everybody who helped supply the information was first rate. I don't tie Frank, but this will be my 16th budget, so I'm familiar with the changes we've gone through. And in recent years, the rationale for setting low targets has often been stated that it's only if we do that the public will become educated about what they might lose, and they'll come to us and tell us what they care about, and we'll make adjustments. The flip side of that is, as one of the legislators mentioned, it puts tremendous stress on staff and also on agencies. And we all know what hurt it's going to cause. So it's not clear to me that we actually have to go through this kind of exercise this year. But if that's what the majority do, that's what we will do. I am loath to encourage Joe to come in meeting a 3% target. It will be brutal. And what we will see is what Joe's priorities are. And what we should be doing is showing the public what our priorities are. I would be much happier this year to not give Joe a target. than to give him a 3% target.
Thank you. I'm sensing we're actually getting close to people's spirit of needing a vote. Pam McAsey.
I pass.
Okay, I think we're ready to vote. I'm going to ask for a roll call vote on the 3% Budget Committee recommendation from this afternoon. It's in front of you as a revised.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Hattery?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Ms. McAsey?
No.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Mr. Randall?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stevenson?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Ms. Chuck?
No.
Mr. Klinkelaer?
Yes.
7 ayes, 8 noes.
7 ayes and 8 noes, that fails. Nathan Shinagawa.
Never mind.
Okay. Mike Sigler.
I'm allowed to recall it, right? Or should I put something else up that I don't think will pass?
You're allowed to recall it, or you can put up a different number.
Put up a different number first, see how that goes, and then I may recall that. I mean, I'd like to move that we set a zero target.
Is there a second for a 0% tax levy increase for 2010? Kathy Luz Herrera. Because we've heard most of the arguments at 3 and 4%, could I proceed to a vote?
Yes.
All in favor of the amendment to change the Budget Committee recommendation from 3% to 0% tax levy target, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That fails 4 to 11.
Okay, then since I was at a center on the 3%, I'd like to recall that.
You move to reconsider. You have to have a second, correct?
Yes.
Second to reconsider, Kathy Luz Herrera. Do we have to vote on the reconsideration?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the vote on reconsideration, and then we'll actually vote on the motion again, and it's on the floor. Right?
Can I amend that? Once it's
He's reconsidering a former vote, so we have to vote on that first. If that fails, or I guess that's once it's back on the floor, we can amend it. But we're going to vote whether to reconsider.
I have a question about process.
Yes.
What happens if we don't set a target tonight? We are then leaving it up to the administrator to come in with a recommended budget, having heard the discussion, but not with a set target by us. Is that correct?
Correct. We will still have our target resolution to department heads in June, but we will not have an overall goal for the organization to a guideline to meet.
But it doesn't mean that we don't have a budget coming in for
not
a review.
All.
And
the requirement from the county administrator is to give us a recommended budget on September 1st. All in favor of reconsidering the 3%, which is the revised county financial goal from budget committee, please raise your hands and keep them up. All in favor of reconsidering. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Opposed to reconsidering? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Maybe I didn't capture someone in the first.
Can we have a roll call vote on this, please?
Roll call on reconsideration of the 3% tax levy guideline.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Hattery?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Ms. McAsey?
No.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Mr. Randall?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stevenson?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Ms. Chuck?
No.
Mr. Klinkelaer?
Yes. So the 3% guideline passed. What was the number?
9 ayes, 6 noes.
9 to 6, which means that the 3% is back on the table. We're ready to vote if we've had this full discussion.
And does that mean it's open for amendments?
It is open for amendments.
Thank you.
Yes. Martha Robertson.
This may be silly. I'm guessing that Mike is going to change his no to a yes on 3%, but I'm going to try to amend this to 3.5%.
Is there a second on 3.5%? Yeah. Harold Chalk.
I will second it because... wait, I have the figures from Norma. I emailed her today and asked what was the exact amount that it would take to cover those mandates. And
it was,
but it was 3.5% exactly.
Without the pensions, yes.
Without the pensions, but at least covering
the rise. That's your rationale for seconding. Is there further discussion before we vote on 3.5? We've heard many of the arguments on a variety of numbers. Are we ready to vote? I'm going to ask for a hand vote, unless someone asks for a roll call. All in favor of 3.5%, please raise your hand and keep them up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Could you please, 5 and 6 for Will and...
this vote is to...
For 3.5% tax levy goal. That's 6. Got them all? All opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That failed 6-9. We're back to the main motion out of Budget Committee. 3% tax levy guideline, the revised wording on in front of you. Are you ready to vote on that?
Could we have a roll call vote, please?
Certainly. Roll call vote on the reconsidered 3%.
Mr. Dennis?
Before I say yes, I'd like to thank Mike for making the suggestion for this meeting to do the roll calls and see how quick we respond.
Okay.
That's a yes.
Mr. Hattery?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Ms. McAsee?
No.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Mr. Randall?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
No, just kidding. Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
You wouldn't take the bullet for me, Hattery. Remember that.
Yes.
Mr. Stevenson?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Klinkelaer?
Yes.
8 ayes, 7 noes.
Thank you. We have a tax levy goal for 2010. 8 ayes, 7 noes. We're going to move on to Resolution C. We have 5 minutes.
I would move it, but I'm guessing we're going to get it done in 5 minutes.
Okay, we have we already have some guests arriving for our 7 o'clock presentation, but we will start the discussion. Resolution C.
All right, I'll move Resolution C, ratification of bargaining agreement, Civil Service Employees Association, White Collar Unit, authorizing transfer of funds for salary adjustments, and I would move that.
This is the revised version?
Revised version.
And Kathy Luce Herrera seconds. Is there discussion?
Let me just make one comment. It passed 3-2 out of the committee.
Yep, that's on the revised version at the bottom.
As you can see.
Discussion.
Yes, I'd like to recommend an amendment to the third whereas.
Yes.
It would be read whereas on May 15, 2007, by resolution number 77, the legislature decided that confidential salary adjustments and benefits shall be at the same level as those negotiated by the white collar unit. And I would, in the first resolve...
That's actually... Okay, that's in the revised, except for the word bargaining.
Oh, sorry. Oh, no, but... Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I still haven't gotten this straight. In the first resolved, in the last... Next to the last line, where management is included, we to cross that off.
So up from the revised, the only wording change you're now... moving is taking the words "and management" out of the first resolve. Is there a second? Martha seconds. Okay, this is now on the amendment to take out two words. Discussion. Pam as mover, Martha as seconder, then Kathy Luce Herrera.
Well, since we have entered the era of tough choices, this is not an unpleasant thing at all on my part to do. I think our management does spectacular work. But I think that we have to start making these hard choices someplace. And we are, when you're in this kind of situation, you try and minimize layoffs, you try and share the burden. And in this case, I think that, as Martha pointed out, we would we would be saving over $200,000 by not allowing this raise for management. And I think that we need to face facts and where we're going with this. So I strongly think that this is would be our signal that we're serious about doing this. I think that this is a mistake, but I think that it is in line with the thinking that has prevailed tonight in terms of the tax levy increase.
Okay, it's about 3 minutes up. I see four or five hands, but I will record them. But I'm going to only call them three people and hopefully 1 minute each. I have Martha, Kathy, and then Jim, and I've seen the other hands.
I agree with everything Pam has said, exactly. And Joe, you said each year, what would the number be?
132.
That's it, $132,000.
Okay, for this year and for next year. Mm-hmm. If this amendment fails, I think people ought to be consistent. If you're going to be a fiscal hawk, the first vote after being a fiscal hawk, you should vote to cut costs wherever you can. If this fails, I have another alternative, but I think this is the right thing to do at this time.
Kathy, and then Jim, and then we'll break for our presentation. I do
Thank
have Frank,
you, Mr. Chair.
Nathan, and Dooley for after the presentation.
This is what I call a take the baby amendment. It's a way to get attention. The fact is, if you look at the substance of this and listen to what was said before in the previous argument, the very employees that we were feeling so bad about, the stress that the 3% budget would put on them, it's being suggested now that we penalize them by not allowing the hard work that the bargaining committee did and that the bargaining unit did in coming to as fair a decision as they could make, be jeopardized by putting something in it saying, take the baby! If you really care, you'll take the baby. Please, don't be fooled by this. Support the resolution as it was originally adopted, and don't be sidetracked by this specious resolution, amendment, whatever it is.
And one more comment by Jim, then we'll have our presentation.
I'm not going to support this deletion of the word management. I agree with Kathy. The same people that we're asking to do the hard work, we're kind of sideways reminding them that we're not going to pay them or we're not going to do that. This is 09 money. Every legislator here got a raise in 09. And this is nothing for 2010, even though you say it's in their base. Of course it's in their base. I think what should come out of this meeting is that 2010 is going to be a zero year.
Does that mean
we're going to be at the table with everyone, and I'm willing to say that, and in that it's going to be a very tough year to do anything like that. I think you have to do this. No, you don't have to. I think you should do this.
Okay, we have Steve Losey here for our 7 o'clock presentation. We have some people from council. Greg,
Mike, I have potentially a point of order.
Sure.
I wasn't going to say anything because I didn't think this would be all that controversial. I have to recuse myself from the white-collar agreement. We've got a lot of stuff lumped in this one resolution. I'd like to separate the white-collar from the rest of this resolution, and perhaps some of that legwork can get done while the presentation
okay,
is going
I will,
on. So I wanted to mention that before we
move. I'll add you to the list, and at the appropriate time, we'll have moved to separate.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Steve, why don't you go ahead and start setting up, Steve, in terms of the PowerPoint. And we'll continue discussion until that's all ready.
Do you want to hold discussion until after the PowerPoint?
Well, I think it'll take 2 or 3 minutes, so I'm glad to. Is this a point of order, or is this continuing the discussion on now an amendment?
If we're not going to move on this now, we need to postpone action on this till after the presentation, because it's been moved and seconded.
No, it's still on the table.
That's right.
And our agenda allows for a special presentation to commence at a certain time, which is what we're doing. So we don't have to suspend debate. It is just still proceeding, and this is just now.
Okay, well then, as long as you got 2 minutes, I'll ask my question. Was I next?
Yes, you actually were next.
If we pull whether management is in there or not, are we still paying longevity bonuses?
Oh, yeah.
If they have been paid, they will continue to be paid. All of these are just rolling over existing contracts with a 2.25% increase in base pay.
Okay, so whether management is in there or not, all three of these categories will still be entitled to longevity pay.
Yeah, there's been no change in that.
Okay, second, I just want to say out loud, earlier today it was announced that the New York Times union agreed to a 5% wage decrease in order for these individuals to keep their jobs. And I'm going to propose an additional amendment at the appropriate time, and I'll be guided by your, by the chairman's guidance.
Okay. Let's suspend discussion until after the presentation. Steve has I don't think, we all got a 33-page copy of the PowerPoint electronically and also in our packets. If you take a moment to pull them out while he brings up the presentation, we will have he'll walk through the presentation fairly crisply, and then we'll have time for question and answer. Mike Lane, could you keep that door open so some guests would be able to find their way in here if they're looking for this presentation? Thank you. Are you getting what you need, Steve?
Oh, hopefully.
There you go, PowerPoint. Oh, good. Again, the PowerPoint is in the first three pages of what was handed out in your packet and was sent to you electronically if you want to turn to that. And now we're
all right. Technology works.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. First off, I want to thank everybody for giving me the opportunity to come out and speak tonight. Secondly, I wanted to apologize. I know you got a lot of information very late. This meeting was added after our TCOG meeting a week ago Thursday, and we were anticipating having two meetings in mid-May. We know that you like to get documents ahead of time, as most elected officials and legislative bodies do. We'll certainly do a better job in the future of getting things out to you earlier. The purpose of tonight is really just to kind of give you an additional update on what's going on in terms of the consortium, give you an opportunity to ask some questions, hear some more information, and it's really another starting point, if you will, hopefully leading to some good discussion and a decision sometime in July of 2009, moving forward to implementation of the plan in 2010. That being said, I want to quickly walk you through the slideshow, just touching on a few key elements, some of the things that we've done so far. There's a lot more detail that we're finishing up right now. We've got side-by-sides done of all the indemnity plans. We're working on the PPO plans now. Those will be going out in the very short term. We've produced a lot of information in terms of premium equivalent rates have gone out. I think you received copies of at least the plan designs and the premium equivalent rates. But I'd like to just go through some of the items, talk to you again about some of the concepts, and then hear from you about some of the issues and concerns that you folks may have. That being said, the first thing I want to do is just reiterate one more time for everybody the goal of the consortium, because the concept of the Municipal Health Insurance Consortium is very important as we move forward. And really what we're asking you to do is buy into this goal or this concept. And basically what we're asking you to do is to pool your resources, all the municipalities, including the county, the city, the towns and villages, to purchase health insurance in a much more efficient manner than that which you could do individually on your own out in the open marketplace. Now, I preface and kind of paraphrase a little bit, but that's a concept we're trying to put forward here. It's a concept that's worked extremely well amongst the school districts throughout the state, and it's something that is blossoming amongst the counties and the towns and villages. And really, the reason it hasn't happened until now, and we've spoken about this in the past, is that the larger entities have a little bit less to gain than the smaller entities But it certainly makes sense for the overall good of the community, of the tax base of the county, et cetera. In terms of costs and looking forward, just to give you a feel for what we're talking about in terms of estimates for 2010 and what kind of dollars we're talking about in terms of the overall health insurance plan, provide you with a little bit of information about the income. And just to give you a little bit of background in terms of the income, the lion's share of the income is going to be delivered through premium equivalent rates. That's just like premiums that you would pay to a health insurance plan. It's going to be made up of contributions from the employees, from the retirees, from those people who are purchasing COBRA coverage, and then obviously also from the employers. Right now, if everybody participated, we're estimating that the premium that we would generate based on the premium equivalent rates that have been developed would be about $22.8 million. Each year, there will be interest income that's generated off of the reserve funds that are held by the consortium. In the initial year, it's going to be very small. We only built in about $40,000. There are other miscellaneous incomes that would come into the program. Those would be things like prescription drug rebates and perhaps reimbursements on stop-loss insurance claims. For the first year, we build nothing in for that. Certainly in the second year, we would at least build in prescription drug rebate as something that would be an income item associated with the program. The total income being about $22.85 million. Looking at the estimated expenses for 2010, you'll see quickly that the lion's share of the expenses is related to paid claims. That paid claims figure that you're looking at about $17 million, represents what we would call an immature year of paid claims. Basically, what's going to happen on January 1st of 2010, when the program kicks off, claims are only going to be submitted to the program that are incurred on January 1st and after. So as a result of just the natural lag of billing and claims processing, we're not going to have a lot of paid claims expenses in the months of January and February. It'll probably be sometime along March or April when we'll really get to what we would consider to be a fully mature month of paid claims. As a result of that, we're going to have some excess premium left over that's going to be utilized to establish reserve funds for the program. So that's one of the things that you'll see moving forward from 2010 to 2011. We're putting together a 3 to 5 year kind of pro forma for you to take a look at in terms of estimated costs into the future. You'll see the paid claims number jump significantly moving from 2010 to 2011 because of the fact that we won't have the advantage of that initial lag or that initial cash flow that will be generated at the beginning of the program. Administrative fees for an insurance company or third-party administrator to operate and manage the program at about $1.2 million. Stop-loss insurance would be insurance to cover both significant catastrophic losses on an individual basis and then also on a group-wide basis. Those are insurances really to protect the cash flow of the group. That is roughly what the premium will be associated with those. We built in expenses for legal fees, consultant fees, audit fees, other insurances that may be required, internal coordination fees for whichever employer ends up managing the program from a financial perspective, collecting premiums, investing those funds, paying the bills, things of that nature, and then some miscellaneous expenses. Total expenses about $18.8 million. So that's roughly what we're looking at in terms of budget expectations for 2010 if everybody participates. Based on that, we've developed premium equivalent rates, and what we're looking at right now is that for 2010, based on the premium equivalent rates and the current census counts for the county and the city, that the county's total cost would go up by about 6%, the city would go up by about 3%. Part of the reason why the city isn't going up as high as the county is because they were tagged with a 24% increase this year from their health insurance carrier, which in reviewing a lot of the documentation, we feel was an overreaction to one bad year that they had in 2008 where they had a couple catastrophic losses. That's one of the things that can happen to you when you're out in the open insurance market on your own. The insurance company is going to dictate to you what the premium increase is going to be. And if you have significant claims in 1 year, even if it's a result of a catastrophic situation that probably won't recur again in the future, you're going to get tagged for that, at least in the next year, and then they'll adjust going forward. Just as a point of information, we're completing now, and it's almost 100% done, analysis for each and every entity in terms of what their increase or decrease would be relative to these premium equivalent rates. And just as you see a fairly modest increase for both the county and the city going to 2010, we did the same analysis for the town of Ithaca, just completed it actually this morning, and we found that their costs in aggregate are actually going to go down by about 15% as a result of this consortium. So again, you know, mention the point again, you know, we knew going into this that the smaller entities were going to benefit on a percentage basis much greater than the larger entities, just from the sheer fact that they're not able to take advantage of some of the same things that the larger employers are able to take advantage of in the marketplace. In terms of estimated number of contracts, and again, we're going to be providing a detailed financial analysis that will show individual two-person and family contract counts, but the rates are going to be different plan designs. We'll have that out in the next week or so. But just to give you an idea of estimated contract counts for the program in total, the county is about 1,200 contracts. The city is about 650. The six villages make up about 100 employees, or contracts, I should say. And then the towns make up about 200 contracts. And again, you know, we know that the city and the county are the predominant players in this. One of the reasons why we went as far as we did in terms of developing a lot of safeguards into the program. You know, certainly there's some risk associated with the program that we'll talk about in a little bit in terms of on the back end, but certainly no greater than what you experience out in the insurance marketplace today, and we can build in certainly a lot of safeguards to protect the city and the county over the long term. In terms of the different benefit plans that have been developed, and you received, I believe, two of them in your packet, we've developed an indemnity plan for the consortium. We've also developed a PPO plan for the consortium. We'll be distributing to you in the next couple of days a comprehensive medical plan, which is a plan design that the county currently has. It's kind of a quasi-high-deductible health plan. We are also developing high-deductible health plans. You've seen the prescription drug card plans. Those are attached to both the indemnity and PPO plans. In addition, a couple things that I don't have on here that we're looking at Medicare supplement programs. We're also looking at other ancillary benefits like dental and vision that may be offered through the consortium separate from the base health insurance plans. What benefits will be offered, or what will benefits be? Benefits are going to be equal to or better than the existing plans. As I mentioned, we're preparing side-by-side benefit detailed analysis for each and every entity. We just finished the county and the cities. We're going to be delivering those before the end of the week. What we found so far is that across the board, the benefits are at least equal to what's currently being offered in a couple small areas. There may be a couple of enhancements to make sure that everybody's getting at least what they had prior to the consortium beginning. We're not increasing any of the out-of-pocket spending for the members. So if your copay is $10, your copay will be $10 under the consortium. Same thing with the prescription drug copays, deductibles, out-of-pocket maximums, lifetime maximums. All those elements will be the same as they were under the prior plans. There's going to be a lot of different benefit plans offered. Again, there's a lot of different benefit plans out there today. But the other thing we want to make sure is that you have the flexibility to have options to negotiate to in the future. And, you know, with a lot of the talk about, you know, budget constraints and things of that nature, we know that we have to give you a lot of tools going forward in terms of working with the labor unions to make sure you provide a good benefit plan, but certainly one that's affordable as well. In terms of the collective bargaining process, really that process will remain unchanged. That's really the purview of the employers. And just to get into a little bit more detail about that, you know, one of the things that's always kind of a delicate balance for these consortiums is you want to be there to support the employers, be a vehicle to provide the health benefits, but you don't want to be a roadblock or cause any type of concern relative to collective bargaining. Really, that's the purview of the employers. You will still control the eligibility for benefits, what plans are available for participation, what the contribution levels will be, how people will vest for that insurance in retirement. All those things are really still going to be controlled by the employer. So you're not giving up any control with regard to what's going to be offered to the employees or to the retirees in the future. It's just that it'll be through a different vehicle. Just like you may have had to work with Blue Cross Blue Shield to talk to them about options that may be available for negotiations, now it would just be working through the consortium for those same things. In terms of the employer protections, you know, again, we've talked a little bit about this. Obviously, collective bargaining agreements will dictate a lot of what happens. New York State Insurance Department oversight is paramount to what's going on with the program. We've already had the municipal cooperative agreement reviewed by them. We are awaiting some dates from them for a meeting later this month to start to talk about the implementation process with the state. Obviously, you will have representation in the process on the board of directors. And then the sharing of information and results. I think that this is one of the keys for you folks. You'll be seeing a lot more data relative to the health insurance plan, certainly a lot more analysis relative to budgets much earlier in the process. And we think that that'll be a significant tool for you to do your job as you move forward during this, you know, not only the tough time in 2010, but looking forward, you know, from everything that we're reading and seeing, it's not going to be any easier in 2011 or 2012. So one of the things that we think that the consortium is going to be critical in doing or performing for the entities will be gathering, analyzing, and providing a lot of information and analysis back to you so that you know how to react to that relative to your own budget. Excuse me. In terms of the governance of the consortium, you know, the board of directors is really critical. One of the things that we want to ask you to do in the documentation that you received the most up-to-date municipal cooperative agreement. If you could just look through the sections that we've identified in terms of structure, the actions, the officers of the consortium. We want you to think about the duties and responsibilities of the person that's going to be on the board of directors. And we want you to really consider choosing your representative wisely. The legislative bodies of each of the entities are charged with choosing who is going to represent them on the board of directors. And that really is a very critical component. You know, certainly there will be, these meetings are open to the public. They're the subject of the open meeting laws. You can have more representatives come to the meetings and hear information and take part in discussion, but they would have no ability to bring forth any resolutions or have any voting authority. It would only be your chosen representative that would have that authority on the consortium board of directors. The other thing that I think is critical in terms of concepts, and we hear this sometimes with some of our school consortiums, because they've been around a long time and some of the folks that started the consortium are no longer on the board of directors, they're all new people on the board of directors, and sometimes we get into the situation where the employers refer to the consortium as, you know, them and us. You know, and we really think it's very, very important for all the employers to remember you are the consortium. You have a representative on that board of directors. You dictate what happens relative to the consortium. The consortium is really made up of you. And if you want a different direction for that, that really has to come from you folks in terms of direction and guidance. You know, I really can't state that more emphatically, that really the participants need to take ownership of the consortium. It's not a separate entity. It's not, you know, that big bad insurance company or something along those lines. It really is you. The other thing that in terms of the board of directors and governance, in terms of voting methodologies, we've spoken a lot about not only what types of things require just a simple majority vote and some things that require a supermajority, but we talked a lot about the weighted voting model that's built in the municipal cooperative agreement. We've had a lot of discussion about that. I know that there's varying opinions on whether or not it went far enough in terms of the weighting or went too far in terms of the weighting. I've mentioned a couple times in the past that it seems like nobody's really thrilled with it. So I guess, you know, maybe we did strike a kind of a happy balance in there somewhere in terms of the weighted voting model. But it was difficult. I mean, when you look at it from a financial perspective, the county and the city are just such a big part of the program, that in order to provide a meaningful voice in the process for the towns and villages, you couldn't rely on, you know, weight in terms of contract counts or premiums that are paid in. You really had to come up with some kind of a unique model. Hopefully we did that. You know, I think that time will tell whether or not it's effective, but hopefully it will be in the future. And again, you know, it's everybody's in this together. Although the stakes are higher in terms of the dollar value, when you think of it in terms of percentage impact and things of that nature, it could be more traumatic for the smaller entities than the larger ones, depending on what happens in the future. So you kind of have to look at it from both sides, and that's what we try to do in terms of the voting methodologies. The other thing that I think is important as you move forward in considering whether or not you know, this consortium is going to get off the ground and whether or not the county is going to ultimately or the city is going to ultimately join and support the consortium is this is not a lifetime membership. Although the goal of the consortium is long-term involvement of all the municipalities, we think that the long-term strategy is the way to go. The goal of the consortium is not to save significant dollars today, but to stabilize costs over time, make the program as efficient as it possibly can be, strip out any inefficiencies in terms of insurance company profits and margins and things of that nature. And we think that if you look at it as a 5-10 year process, you will see significant savings over time. So it is a long-term involvement, but you certainly have the right and the ability to make an annual decision on whether or not you want to participate or continue to participate in the consortium. I mentioned it's in Section O of the agreement. There's a notice provision. As long as you give notice prior to October 3rd of each year that you would like to withdraw, you can certainly do so before that. And then that withdrawal would be effective on January 1st of that following year. You do have only one time each year to make that determination, and then you are locked in for the next fiscal year or plan year. But again, that decision would be eligible for you to take again the following October 3rd. So it is, an annual process in terms of your decision whether or not you want to participate in the consortium into the future. In terms of timeline, you know, in terms of what we're looking at this point, we're looking for approval of a resolution. I know it's been disseminated sometime between now and July. We're looking for agreements to be signed between now and no later than September, if possible. Informational meetings are starting now and continuing through November. Open enrollment we're hoping to have in the late summer, early fall. An implementation process starting in the early fall going through January 1st of 2010 with a plan operations beginning on January 1st, 2010. I did add one slide, or actually two slides, to the presentation that you didn't have in case, I don't know if everybody's seen this yet, but this is the resolution that was drafted. And we'll certainly make sure, I believe it was sent out electronically to everybody. If you don't have a copy of it, we'll certainly make sure that you do get a copy of it. But it's really just a resolution supporting the consortium and authorizing the signing of the agreement by each municipality. And then the second page of it just resolves that the municipality chief elected officials hereby authorize to execute an intermunicipal agreement effective January 1st, 2010. So this is the draft resolution that's been sent out to all the municipalities that they can use to craft their own resolution for authorization to sign an intermunicipal agreement when the time is right. That's kind of a quick reduced digest version. I know that we want to make sure to allow enough time for questions and comments. You know, certainly we're here to address whatever issues you have, keeping in mind that more and more detail is coming out every day relative to the program. And we'll certainly continue to make sure that you folks get that as quickly as possible. It's kind of an exciting time because there are a lot of things coming to conclusion all at the same time. But certainly it's also a very tense time as people are starting to think about whether or not this consortium is actually going to come to fruition and get off the ground. So with that being said, I guess we'll open it up for questions, comments, concerns. Yes, Jim.
Mike and then...
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Mike Sigler and Jim.
I just two quick questions. You mentioned the 6% increase to the county, 3% for the city. How much of an increase are we looking at if we were just to not do this and stay in the program we have now? Or is that 6% on top of the increase we're already looking
at? No. That's 6% over the current 2009 costs.
Okay.
So whatever your savings would be whatever the increase that the insurance company would have given you, less that 6%. So if the insurance company comes back next year with an 8, theoretically the savings is 2.
Right.
Now,
okay.
One of the things that will happen is as we move forward, in terms of the budget process, you know, and I just went over this with Albany County. I was there earlier today and shot over here for this presentation. You know, they made a similar kind of bold move about 3 years ago. They had three different insurance programs, all insured out in the marketplace. they consolidated those into one self-insured program. It's actually under a minimum premium, so it's kind of a quasi self-insured program. But their savings over that 3.5 year period has been about 11%. It actually beat the expectation that we had. But that being said, they're still looking at a 9% increase potentially in 2010. Once you become efficient as possible, you're still subject to the same conditions that you're subject to today in terms of, you know, the inflationary increases on medical services, new medical technologies coming out, you know, people living longer, using more services, prescription drug expenses increasing. Those same pressures will still be there. The only thing we're trying to do is build a more efficient model collectively amongst all the employers to hold the cost down over a longer period of time. So instead of like the city experiencing a 7, a 7, and then a 24, we're hoping to make that a lot more stable going forward. And, you know, it may not sound as great as coming to you and saying, oh, geez, you know what, we're going to lower your expense by, you know, 10% going forward in, you know, in 2010, and then having us come back to you in 2011 and say, oh, geez, you know, we need a 15% increase. We think it's better to start the program conservatively with premium equivalent rates that are realistic, build our reserve balances, and then in another year from now or 2 years from now, things look a little bit better. We've got some reserve balance. Maybe we have some equity built into the program. We can use that equity to hold down a rate increase. So instead of being a 7 or an 8, we can hold it down to a 4 or a 5 to help a budget year. We think that that's a much better model than trying to give you an unrealistic expectation in year 1 and just then trying to play catch-up in years 2 and 3.
Just to give a quick, short version answer is our historic rate has been between 8 and 10% over the last few years. So that's the savings. I have Jim, then
My question is, organizations opting out, how many times would they be, if they opted out 1 year, can they come back in, and would there be a control on how many times a group could opt out?
There's no control over how many times, but there are some protections built in terms of time. There's a three-year window that if they opt out, they can't come back in for 3 years unless the board of directors overrides that and allows them to come in earlier. So there are some protections in there. Yeah, we, you know, one of the things I talked about was, you know, this is really kind of a long-term commitment. We don't want employers trying to guess the market, so to speak. And, you know, 1 year because they think that their insurance rate's going to be bad, they jump into the consortium. And then the next year because the insurance rates seem to be a little bit lower, they jump out of the consortium. That is not in any way in the best interest of this group. You know, certainly if the county or the city did that, it would destroy the consortium. A couple of smaller entities could probably do it. It wouldn't damage the consortium in any way. Financially, again, the county and the city are such big players in this. You're really going to be the ones that move the trend in terms of what's going to happen from year to year with the budget. The smaller towns and villages are really going to be the ones that take advantage of that larger buying power that you're producing for them. Thank you.
I have Martha, then Maria, then Mike Hattery, and I see other hands. Martha?
Well, the 8 to 10% of the last few years sounds low. I remember distinctly 12 to 15% increases in a number of the years since I've been on the list.
Just an average, yep.
So, 6% isn't 3%, Maria. Good way to go. But it also means that whatever all the future increases are on a lower base. So,
exactly right.
I have a question, how, especially between now and when we vote on it, but forever after, I guess, what's the best way to get our questions answered? I heard that Jackie Kipola was the right conduit, or is it email to you? Or
yeah, if you could focus through Jackie, that would be best for me, just because of the fact that, you know, we're getting inundated with a lot of stuff. We're trying to get a lot of the analysis done. Fortunately or unfortunately, I have other clients that I'm out on the road with sometimes. My office thinks I'm here 90% of the time, which I'm beginning to wonder. But, yeah, if you could work through Jackie, that would be best. I do apologize. I know I've got emails printed out on my desk of things that I need to address. We will get to those. I apologize for the lateness of that. We're trying to get a lot of this analysis done and get it out the door because we know we're coming to a very critical point where people have to start thinking about making decisions. But, yeah, if you could work through Jackie or even Dave, that would be great.
Dave, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, again, Dave Sanders, program manager. Most of those questions, as we said, we do forward to Steve. He does address them periodically. We do have questions that are legal issues, and then obviously he takes care of them and usually brings them back to committee. So questions either to Jackie or myself, we'd be happy to forward them to the parties that can actually answer those questions.
Thank you. I have Maria
just one
next.
Other, I'm sorry, and this is really the staff. If we could get document, it's great to have the plans in the back here, but if we could get, like, what do we have this year now for our different units so we can compare?
We've got those side by side.
We'll do it side by side in a week.
Yeah, the indemnity plans are done. The PPO plans are just being finished up. So we'll have those. It'll be obviously a lot more detail in terms of what's currently being offered and what you're going to have going forward, because that's what, quite frankly, that's what the unions and the labor groups are going to want to see, to make sure that we're complying with the guarantee that we put out there that the program will be equal to or better than what they currently have, and that'll certainly be what they're basing the quality of the consortium off of.
Thank you.
Yep. Maria Coles, thank you for joining us from Common Council as a sole rep.
I have two primary questions, but I'd be glad to take my turn around for the second one, if that's what the group would prefer that I do. I asked Mr. Losey, as we were sitting here quietly, to expound a little bit more on an answer that he gave to City Administration Committee and other members of Common Council who joined the committee for that evening. We were pushing you very hard to answer the question, what could be the horrible things that could happen to the city as a result of the creation of this consortium? And you said that if the smaller municipalities were to pull out all at once or unexpectedly, that the city and the county could be left with a considerable liability. And I don't know. We couldn't ask what that meant. Can you be more detailed?
It's close. Let me just back up a little bit and explain. The question was, you know, what type of financial harm could come to the city or the county, or what exposure is out there? And what I mentioned was the fact that, you know, with this being a shared risk pool, that if one of the smaller entities or a couple of the smaller entities were to leave the consortium, that their exit and their financial analysis in terms of the withdrawal would be based on expected costs and things of that nature. If they had a catastrophic situation that occurred, obviously stop loss might kick in, but there is a potential that a small entity, let's say they have, you know, four employees that are in the program, that they could have a catastrophic loss that may pop up, and because it's a shared pool, that expense would be spread amongst all the members that are left behind. That is a risk. There's no question about it. And again, that's a risk that they're taking on as well. Because if you have a large loss in a given year, or if the city were to withdraw and your losses were greater than anticipated, they would share in that exit cost as well, just like you would share in their exit cost. So there is some risk. I mean, basically, the consortium is a small insurance company. And each entity from year to year is going to have a varying level of risk and loss associated with that. Health insurance is cyclical, yes. Unpredictable, yes. It's hard to get great expectations in terms of what's going to happen from year to year, because you're dealing with humans, you're dealing with illness, you're dealing with unforeseen circumstances. You have no idea when someone's going to develop a cancer or have a head trauma or need a significant transplant or things of that nature. So that does make it somewhat of an unknown. There are protections built into the program. We'll have reserve funds. We'll have stop-loss insurance. We'll try to minimize that exposure as much as possible. But clearly there is an exposure there. And that exposure exists for all the employers.
Mike, can I have a follow-up?
Sure, thank you.
So to clarify, the reason why the city and the county would face potentially more liability is because we own a bigger share of the...
Exactly company. Right. That's exactly right.
Thanks.
Yep. Thank you. Lost
Can
my
I be put back on the list?
Certainly. Mike Gattery, then Carol Chop.
You mentioned this. I haven't read the governance arrangements. You mentioned there's a way to come back in if you go out. What if the municipality and the county decides not to be a part at the outset? Is it basically up to the existing governing group to decide whether they're going to let them in if they want
to. No, there's actually a provision in the agreement for anybody who decides not to join initially that they could join at a later date. Yeah. There is a provision for that. There's also a provision for municipal corporations outside of Tompkins County to be eligible for our participation if the Board of Directors deems it appropriate. And one of the things I've mentioned in the past was that if you are going to consider entities that are neighboring, the only things you would want to make sure is that they're similarly situated in terms of, you know, similar demographics, similar risk. They're purchasing their medical care in similar areas, so that their costs would be pretty close to what your folks' costs would be. If that's the case, then it certainly would make sense to add more partners. The larger these groups are, the more stable they are. It's just like an insurance company. You know, law of averages, the law of large numbers certainly applies here. Our largest consortium right now that we work with is up in Syracuse. It's the Onondaga, Cortland, Madison, BOCES. They've got, I think, 27 school districts currently participating. Two more are looking to join. There are around 14,000 contracts now and roughly about $120 million annually in terms of health insurance expense. And their program is extremely stable. They haven't had an increase in the last 4 years over 5%. And that's the target. And they're, in terms of their administrative overhead expense, they're down around 3.5%. That means that 96 cents on the dollar, or a little over 96 cents on the dollar, is being dedicated to pay benefits. And only less, a little bit less than 4% or 4 cents on the dollar is going for everything else. All those other items that I listed on the budget that we had up there. So if we can grow it to be a little bit bigger, certainly it'll be more stable, be more efficient, and it'll certainly give you a lot more protection going forward. But right now we're working, obviously, with just the municipalities inside Tompkins County to do that.
I have six speakers, but the next two are Carol, then Dooley.
Well, I had two questions. One is quickly, do you have a recommendation that you've been making to the entities as to what type of representative you're recommending that we appoint as our directors? Are we looking at staff or political appointees? And then this may be a longer answer that has to be answered as we go over the lists, but in an earlier presentation you did talk about wanting to achieve the coverage for the our employees of the kind of items they're used to having covered. Yep. Is there anything that jumps out at you as things you couldn't achieve there where
no.
coverage is going to go down?
Actually, we think that we've done a good job of meeting every benefit expectation that they would have. So I think we're going to have pretty good success working with the unions and showing them that the benefit plan is going to be equal to or better than what they currently have. In terms of your
recommendation.
In terms of the first question, in terms of the recommendation, we've not made any recommendation to any of the entities. The only thing I would suggest to you is that whoever the representative to the board is going to be, and that's really 100% up to you folks who you want to appoint, but it should be someone who has a base understanding of health insurance, has a base understanding of some budgeting practices in terms of what's going on with you know, just general budgeting, and maybe not specifically for health insurance. We'll certainly educate them as much as we can relative to that. But certainly they want to have a base understanding of health insurance and employee benefits so that when resolutions and things come up at the table, they'll be able to make decisions and represent you folks well in that regard. But in terms of a political appointee or staff member, that's really up to you folks.
As a follow-up, can I ask, you know, how that's worked in other places that you've done this? And
well, most of the consortiums that are out there right now are school-based, and they typically either pick the superintendent or the chief business officer, whoever that might be, is typically who they pick to run their board of directors. I really don't have a feel for what some of the towns and villages may do. It may be, you know, the supervisor or the mayor, or it could be whoever's the primary person handling the health insurance. At the county, obviously, you have a lot of very skilled people that you could draw from, whether it's someone in the finance office or the county administrator or someone from human resources. You've got, obviously, a wealth of knowledge there from all different perspectives. So I don't know that I have a good answer for you, unfortunately.
Okay, next I have Dooley, then Greg, and I see other hands.
Can you give us any sense of how many of our constituent municipalities are likely to join?
I have no idea at this point, to be honest with you. All I can tell you is we went out and met with every single body at some point in the last 2 months. The reception seemed very positive. There's still some concern, obviously, in terms of working through some of the issues with some of the labor groups. But I really don't have a feel today of how many are going to actually sign on. We have two more meetings coming up where we're inviting elected officials from all the towns and villages in the middle of the month. Hopefully after that meeting we'll have a better handle on who is more likely to participate initially, what entities we may have a little bit more work to do with. We'll target those ones that are maybe teetering, get out there and meet with them a little bit more, provide them a lot more detail, and see if we can't get them to be in the yes column as opposed to the no column at some point. But we're still shooting for all 17 at this point.
Greg, then Frank, then Maria.
Who's going to be the third-party administrator?
Actually, the request for proposal is out right now. The responses are due back this Friday. So we'll be looking at those over the next couple of weeks. We'll be meeting with the Health Benefits Steering Committee. They'll be making a recommendation to TCOG, and then the Tompkins County Council of Governments will decide who would be the recommended third-party administrator. And then once the board of directors is in place, they will have to formally adopt them as, you know, through recognition as the administrator for the program. So there's still a little bit of a process to go through.
How many RFPs were sent out?
You know, with that, I don't know off the top of my head. I know that we targeted all the large insurance companies, the Blue Cross, GHI, MVP, United Healthcare, and all the large regional TPAs, RIMSCO, POMCO, a couple other ones. And I know from the questions that we've received and that a lot of them are very anxious to respond. Most of the entities currently have Blue Cross Blue Shield in one form or another. So one of the things that we've mentioned is that our target, just like in terms of meeting the benefit line item, one of the goals that we obviously have to have is that the service provider is going to have to at least provide the same level of service, network, discounts, things of that nature, to be at least equivalent to the Blue Cross Blue Shield, because that's the expectation of the overwhelming majority of the employees and retirees.
Thank you, Steve. We have Frank, Maria, then Will. I'd like to begin to transition back to our regular meeting. Frank?
Steve, I have a couple of questions for you, Steve. The once the administrator is chosen, I imagine then you'll start shopping. You'll be working with the doctor's offices. How will you educate the providers so that they will know who the insurance carrier or provider is here?
All the insurance carriers or the third-party administrators that we're looking at are very well known. They have substantial networks out in the marketplace today. I'm sure that they will be glad to put out some kind of a marketing piece announcing the fact that they've been chosen to administer this particular program. It'll be a pretty prestigious account for any one of them. From that perspective, we'll be working with their provider relations people to get the word out that they're going to be, whoever's chosen will be the third-party administrator associated with the program, and to start to look for county employees, city employees, town and village employees, and retirees and family members to identify them to make sure that their claims get to the right place.
If I might add to that, actually, also, we and the steering committee currently also has provider representation, including from Cayuga.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Cayuga Medical Center is on the steering committee.
Oh, they are? Oh, yeah. Good.
Second question.
What about the window of when you have the opportunity to sign up? Will the current administrators in our county department be the ones that we go to for questions and answers, and employees would go to them?
We're anticipating not only utilizing the staff that's already been doing it, all the employers, but we'll be bringing in whoever's going to be the third-party administrator, having them have representatives there to answer specific questions about, you know, process in terms of claims, information in terms of benefits, how the organization will work in terms of customer service and things of that nature.
Okay. But on your one last one, Mike. On the 2010 estimates, I couldn't help but notice that there's $50,000 set aside for a consultant, $25,000 for legal fees, other expenses, internal coordination. Are some of those one-time fees? one-time charges?
Typically, you're going to find a lot of those expenses built in annually. For the you're going to have some legal representation issues that will come up from time to time. The internal coordination fees, basically, that's going to be for someone to, you know, pay the bills, receive all the funds, deposit reserve accounts, report back out financially. You're going to need someone to develop budgets, rates, do the actuarial evaluations, work with the insurance department on the filings and things of that nature. So you will need some professional assistance from a consulting perspective. Those will be ongoing expenses built into the program.
Thank you. I have Maria next, then Will, then Martha, and I think we can wrap up.
I will ask one question so you can go back to your regularly scheduled meeting. Right now, city employees who are denied benefits have the ability to appeal that decision, and city staff is involved in that process. And the hearing also guaranteed privacy. Mm-hmm. How would something like that be handled by the consortium?
Part of Article 47 requires the consortium to establish an appeals committee for benefit issues. In addition to that, any appeals for things like claims that are denied for medical necessity or experimental investigational would still have the ability to go through the New York State Insurance Department's review process. They have a review process specific for those issues. In terms of the HIPAA concerns, in terms of the confidentiality of information, we would have to adhere with all those rules and regulations, both on the federal level and also from the New York State Insurance Department. But there would definitely be a committee established for any types of claims appeals. Historically, the third-party administrator or the insurance company should be able to handle 99% of the issues that come up. If they can't, you know, there may be an issue in terms of a benefit interpretation that may come back to the consortium. Other than that, most things will be handled either by the insurance department or by the third-party administrator or insurance company. But we do have to have that process at least built into the program.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for coming in, Maria. Will and then Martha.
You said that it would be to our advantage to work toward expansion at some point, assuming we can get off. Are there any legal or practical obstacles to doing such a plan that would incorporate schools as well, or do they have to be kind of separate?
No. You can include any municipal corporation, okay, which would include schools, boards of corporate educational services. You could even include fire districts. But you are precluded from some of the what I call quasi-governmental agencies. Soil and water conservation districts, unfortunately, are not included in that. The question came up about TCAT. Unfortunately, today, they're not eligible. The question also came up about the colleges, and they would not be eligible as of today either. So it's strictly limited to municipal corporations.
And Martha.
Do you have any expectation of the town of Ithaca going down 15%? It's pretty wonderful. Do you think that's going to be a typical... when you crunch the numbers for the smaller municipalities.
When we looked at the a couple of the smaller ones, like the town of Caroline and a couple of the other ones, their cost was almost a break even. But they're moving from what they refer to as an exclusive provider organization plan. They have no out of network benefit, and the PPO plan that the consortium's developed that they would move into would have an out of network benefit. So their benefits may be a little bit better, but their cost structure is going to be a little bit more in line with what they're experiencing today. The difference with the town of Ithaca is they're experience rated. They're a small entity that's experience rated. They really don't – their own claims really have very little to do with what happens with their rate. It's more based on the pool of experience at the Blues, and that dictates what their rate increase is going to be, and that's why they're – modification is so dramatic compared to everybody else. But what we're anticipating happening, at least with the smaller towns and villages we've seen so far, the cost is going to be pretty close to what the 09 cost was, but they may be enhancing their benefits a little bit.
Okay, and same-sex partners, is there any, I hope the RFP assumes that those will be covered?
The benefit plans that we've developed all include domestic partner coverage, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I think that's consistent with what everybody was doing anyways.
If there's no further questions, I'll certainly thank Steve for coming back from Albany and thank our guests for coming. And as he shuts down, we will go back to our regular meeting.
Well, I certainly appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Very.
Can we take a break?
People want a break? Let's do a 5-minute break, and we'll see you back at about 4 minutes of.